A BetterHelp ad. Therapy isn't just for times of major challenge. It's a valuable tool for anyone wanting to improve their well-being. It can help you develop healthy coping skills, set boundaries, and support personal growth. BetterHelp makes it easy to get matched online with a fully licensed therapist right from your phone. No commuting, no waiting rooms. And you can switch therapists at any time. Sign up at BetterHelp.com and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com.
That's a gay ass name for a gay ass podcast.
Maxwell Poth has come on That's a Gay Ass Podcast with his hairy tits in view, and God bless America. Maxwell, did you wear a slutty tank top for this podcast, or is it your daily look?
Both.
Why
other podcasts I've worn, you know, more like, you know, t-shirts, button ups, whatever. But, you know, I watched some videos, you know, I saw my friend Kyle Krieger even shirtless. So I was like, I'm going to wear my meat rack hat. I'm going to wear my tank.
Yeah, absolutely. Meat rack hat, tits out. Do you want to give us a flash of pit before we get into our hard-hitting questions? Thank you. The pits are looking absolutely delicious. And now, because I am a gay-ass journalist, self-proclaimed Maxwell Poth, your first hard-hitting question. Last night's Instagram story revealed a takeout bag from the Cheesecake Factory. Maxwell Poth, what is your political opinion about the Cheesecake Factory? And did you get the four cheese pasta?
Okay, well, if it's a chain restaurant that's good and slaps, always go to it. Being in LA, we don't have a lot of the chain restaurants unless they're in like malls. So sure. Like we don't have Applebee's, we don't have Chili's, we don't have Red Robin. Like we have to drive like an hour to go to these things.
Yeah.
And it's really sad. So drove, you know, really close to the Grove, to the Cheesecake Factory, and it slaps. Didn't get the pasta. Sorry. Had so much fun, and I loved.
Did you go cheesecake, or did you keep it just to the carb?
We just kept it to the carbs this time, you know?
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Well, listen, there's so much that you're going to have to speak to, not only your Cheesecake Factory affiliations, but also the fact that you're a gorgeous short king, the fact that you're an amazing photographress, the fact that you are from Utah. But let's get into the short kingness of it all. There is a meme that says, send this to a short friend to remind them hawks exist and to be careful. Maxwell, you had over 10 people send this meme to you. How did that feel?
You know, I just laugh at this point. Every day I wake up, look up, you know, at my boyfriend or anyone else around me, and I just, you know,
exist.
Laugh.
Yeah. Okay, so give the listeners the deets. You are how tall, and your boyfriend is how tall?
Well, I never say how tall, how short am I when people ask. They just go, oh my
Thank
God,
you
how
so
tall
much.
Are you? I just go, how short am I? Because there's no tall. My personality might be tall. Sure. I am 5 feet and 5 inches tall.
Beautiful. Well, I'll have you know, Maxwell, that I am 6'2", but I have a twin brother who is 5'4". And
what?
So I have so much love in my heart for the short kings of this planet. And I'm so honored to be speaking to one right now.
Oh, yeah, I love that you're a twin. I'm a twin.
Wait, you are?
Yeah, I have a twin sister.
Stop it. Okay, so we're going to set aside the entire interview and we're going to talk twin stuff. Maxwell, twin sister, that's honestly the dream. I love my twin brother. Many people know he was a piece of shit to me growing up. I have a whole show about it. However, part of me always dreamed of having a sister. I've got three brothers. What was it like to have a twin sister?
Okay, well, first of all, I have three sisters.
Shut the fruit.
I never had a brother.
And where are you in the birth order?
My twin and I are the youngest, but I'm a minute older. So I was kind of raised as the middle child with my middle sister.
Sure. And this, would you say that you are gay because you have three sisters? Because statistically speaking, you're not the first boy to be in a fully girly family sucking dick.
You know what? It's definitely probably a thing. I will say my twin is a lesbian, though.
Even better.
She's just a lesbo, you know?
Would you categorize her as butch, lipstick, or she's her own category?
You know, we like to say like her wife is definitely like chapstick lesbian is what we just like to say.
Chapstick, okay.
Like not full lipstick, not full butch.
But there's like a little bit of color to the chapstick. I get that.
Yeah. They're kind of like both like her and her wife are kind of like, you know, like ski bums, ski bros, like skater bros. Like they dress
Amazing.
Like that. And I like we kind of have similar styles, to be honest.
That's so. You can, so is she same height as you?
I'm the tallest in my family. everyone's reaction is quite similar.
So you grew up at the, say it with me, circus. I'm kidding. Short people are not freak shows. Don't cancel.
Oh, well, man. That's a whole nother podcast about my family.
Wait, well, okay. So, well, there's so much to get into because you are a gay guy from Utah, which I feel like is a very fraught subject. But you know what? Since we're already kikiing, let's ask the famous podcast question. Maxwell Poth, whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
Okay, so I was thinking about this and probably I have two quick answers for you.
Great.
One was definitely like, which makes sense, I guess, with being raised by my mom and three sisters, just like female badass power. I was obsessed with Charlie's Angels Full Throttle. I feel like so many gays are. That's like my number one film. Cameron Diaz in a jean and stilettos in a tank, like just like fighting bad guys. So anything like that, like I wasn't even like a Barbie kid. Like I had them, but I preferred like the female action like figures instead.
Oh, sure, sure.
And so like definitely that. And then I would definitely say my father. He is a very like confident man. He was never afraid to like be like this man that he always wanted to be. He was a dancer my whole life. He taught like ballroom. He teaches Zumba. He's a fitness instructor. He was in ballet. My parents met because they were dancers. My dad like and I go to heels classes together. I'm not even a dancer, but I'll go.
Wait, your dad will do heels class with you?
My dad will do a heels class with me. Yeah, mm-hmm. Like this we'll go and like dance.
Incredible. any chance we have to shout out a straight man or a father figure who is very much on the right side of herstory, we celebrate them because I would say, unfortunately, it's a rare occasion that we can celebrate a man for being an ally and good to us. And to do a heels class with your father.
Yeah. And then get this. He went a few classes after because he still lives in Utah and I live here in LA. But he went like a few more times. Like he still went to that class without me.
Walk me through then the lore of your father, because he's giving dancer, met your mom in that world. He had three girls and a gay boy. One of the girls is lesbianic. Would you say that your dad has a bit of fruitiness in him, or does it just happen to be like full throttle ally and just happen to be given the gay lot of life?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say like my dad is like a feminine man like me, like how I like, you know, just to kind of talk. But like he's very much like okay and comfortable in his own skin. And he's always been that way. I mean, it's just been really wonderful.
How did it happen in Utah of all places? Because I feel like Utah, every gay person I speak to from Utah has like a pain behind their eyes and we shout them out. Were you of the Mormon variety? I know that you left the church at 16. I found that in my research. Is it the Mormon church?
Yes. So I'm actually like, we're not Utah natives, my family. So that also, you know, does help. I quick background there. I was raised Mormon. Yes. But I'm originally from Colorado. My dad and my mom are both East Coasters originally. So they moved to Colorado, met there and raised me there with my siblings until my twin and I were like young, moved to Utah when we were like only 8.
Gotcha.
And then my mom split with my dad, married a Mormon man. And we were baptized before that, actually, even my whole family was, but my dad and my older sisters never went really. And then, my twin and I were then raised by a Mormon man from like 9 years old to 19. So I went to church. I was raised Mormon and I went to church every day. I mean, not every day, every Sunday. You know, we had like the mutual, we had family home evening. We had all of these things. So yeah, I was raised in it, but never
is
my
your
dad.
Mom,
he was
is your mom like, still with the Mormon man?
No, she's got him loose.
And has she left the church as well?
Yeah. My twin, I left first, then my twin, and then my mom divorced him. She left.
Okay, so I think every religion has its own flavor. I think Mormonism has a very specific flavor that it's, you know, an
really interesting... Really popular in pop culture right now.
I'll say, but I think what's popular about it right now is that people are exposing the like fucked uppery of it. And I think, and like how it sort of manifests. And so to hear you're like, okay, your mom and dad split up, your mom married a Mormon, raised her kids Mormon, then they split up, the kids left the church, your dad's doing heels over here. There's just like, like I can see, like your family needs a reality show, A of all. B of all, for people listening who doesn't know the full Maxwell Poth lore, you really are an incredibly gifted photographer and creator and writer. For people who don't follow Maxwell yet, Maxwell has photographed so many celebs, Christina Ricci, gay royalty Ricky Martin, the drag queens Trixie Mattel, Sasha Colby, and Nicole Scherzinger. You have shot the old gays, porn gays, Cheyenne Jackson. And so there are so many parts of your story that I love. Before we get into more of your photographizing, I just want to tell you that for whatever reason, I thought you were Jewish. when I first followed you, I saw your hairy tits. I don't know why, but to find out this Mormon lore, it's sort of shocking to me.
You know, maybe it's deep in like my ancestry. I get that sometimes. Like literally the other day, someone was like, so yeah, like what'd you do for like this Jewish
Passover
holiday? Yeah, I was like, I was like, not that.
There's a lot of short people in the Jewish faith. They're obviously like the body hair is a thing that maybe I just sort of, I maybe projected onto you. Like,
you know, I don't know where I got my shortness from. Maybe I am Jewish. I need to do that like 23andMe thing because I'm like mainly Austrian and Irish.
Well,
is what my parents say.
Have plenty
of tall.
Jews. Oh, yeah. Well, listen.
I know. I think we're like that.
One day we'll do like a gay ass 23andMe where we sort of try to figure out the gay parts of your lore, historically speaking. And I honestly don't hate the idea. But I do want to give a bit of a tease because we are going to be doing a Substack conversation where I'm going to ask you about your gorgeous boyfriend. I'm going to ask you about all of the beautiful men you have photographed. You just did a photo shoot at a $30 million house. I will be asking if you've ever fucked at one of those fancy shoots. So that's a little tease for the listeners there. But let's get into the photographing of it all. With all these crazy, cool people you photographed, has any of these celebs or people ever made you nervous? Or do you kind of walk in always now knowing the gig and it never gets to you?
It definitely got easier. I think I would like for when I originally started to actually get jobs booking celebrities, I would get very nervous. But, you know, every time I was on set and we started, it was the job. And I was just kind of always locked in. And now I still always have like a little bit of nervousness in me depending on the celebrity. I don't know how if every photographer feels like this, but I kind of go in with like kind of expecting the worst always, and they always surprise me.
Oh, that's good. I mean, we love to have a moment where you say to yourself, you should meet your heroes, because when you ever meet someone that you adore and they're a total dick, that is devastating beyond.
Yeah. I mean, they understand they're there for the job as well. They're there to get something taken. And, you know, I'm very fun on set. I try to have fun. You know, when I photographed Ricky Martin, which was, you know, so many full circles being a young gay kid living in LA, shooting celebrities now, like even Christina Ricci, like I'm obsessed with the Addams Family and her in general. And just like, she was like, you know, so many, Nicole, I saw her with my father. My father took me to Pussycat Dolls and Britney Spears when I was a kid. So I saw Nicole and now we're friends. And, but Ricky, I remember I was photographing him at this house in Beverly Hills. And, at one point he's like, oh, like, let's go on this giant ottoman and I'm going to lay down. And I was like, okay. So I like kind of like go. And like, this is when I was like kind of newer to photographing celebrities. So I am standing on the side of him. So he's laying down. I'm standing here. And he then grabs my ankle and he looks me in the eye and he goes, you can straddle me. I was just, and then as I straddle him, everyone on set goes like this and just starts photographing us. And I was just like, I cannot believe that Ricky Martin just asked me to straddle him.
My office chair is dripping with moisture. Mm-hmm. My computer is short-circuiting from my drool. Oh, my God. To visualize Ricky Martin saying, you know you can straddle me, and then for Maxwell Poth to then do a full fan kick over his beautiful face. your shadow casts above his head.
Yeah.
And you just point and shoot, baby.
Ooh. Yeah, I did. I definitely did.
You shot all over him. That's incredible. Yeah. So he sounds like someone who was very game, as it were, and yeah. a total gem.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Which is always really nice.
Did you drop that you and Nicole Scherzinger are friends now?
I mean, I wouldn't say we're like besties by any mean, but like we'll chat. Yeah, we definitely will chat. Like when she like needs something, like even photo wise, she'll have like send me questions. She'll be like, I have questions like this and that. But no, we're definitely not like besties by any means. But yeah, definitely. I would say we're
incredible. Yeah, are you excited about her performing at WeHo Pride this year?
Yeah, I can't wait. I even like, I'm sure she's busy, but I even text her. I was like, girl, I want to be the photographer on like BTS. Like, let me know. Like, I got to do this. So if you're listening, yeah.
Yes, Nicole. Nicole is a huge Gayos listener, I'm sure. that's also a testament to you doing those sort of reach outs, I think, is something that I'm trying to figure out. Like, there's, I don't know, you... In fact, this is something that was going to be on the... Substack page, but I feel like I'm gonna pull it out for the main episode here. In January, you posted a very hot thirst trap to Twitter, captioned, five people were waiting to use the bathroom as I took this. Maxwell, have you always been comfortable taking up space at other people's expense?
Actually, it's one of my biggest pet peeves to not do that. So the fact that I did that was hilarious. But you know, you're just out of the gym. You're looking good. You know, you gotta like, sex sells. And even though like, I'm not a model or anything like that, like, you know, you gotta post it. You gotta share it. You gotta keep the followers there.
So that's something interesting that I do sometimes like to get into on the main feed for the podcast, which is like growing up as a gay person, especially if you're in a religious setting, I feel like we are like projected so much shame onto us. Don't take up space. Don't be visible. And you are not only photographing people, but also posting some really great photos of yourself, whether you are clothed or not. Would you say that you like got to a place where there was a flipped switch where you decided I want to be perceived? Or did you always know in your gut that you deserved to take up space no matter if you're 5'5 or 8'4?
Yeah, no, I think I've always been that way. You know, just like, you know, ex-Mormons too, like we're a little feisty, we're a little, you know, repressed. So we like to like kind of get it out now. But no, I've always been that way. I've always been just like, I mean, before LA, before I moved here, I was never like as insecure, you know, but like you move to LA and everyone here is just like working out shirtless at the gym. And you're just like, okay, do I take my shirt off too? Like,
does that get to you? Do you feel like you are, where would you say your insecurities lie, or how have they gotten louder as you photograph more and more beautiful people?
Gosh, I mean, I wouldn't say like I'm fully insecure. I'm not like that guy that has like a nice body and I call myself like, oh, I look so bad. I look so like this. I look like that. But like, I mean, it still gets to you. Like you see like the most ripped people in Los Angeles at your gym every day. And you're just like, and on Instagram and on the only billboards in LA are like movies, hot people, like, look, like, so it's just like, it's just embedded. It's just like pushed onto you so much.
I know it's sort of a reminder of like, no matter what generation you're in, there's always going to be something to make you feel bad about yourself. So like when we were kids, we weren't on Instagram, but we were getting like, whether it was People magazine or just like the hot people that we were thirsting over in the JCPenney catalogs or the commercials or the Abercrombie.
Like, I was always like, I don't look like that. It was Abercrombie kids and they had 25-year-olds modeling for them. Yeah. I was
The body hair of it all, like I feel like in the 90s and early aughts, it was very much like not accepted or celebrated to be hairy. And so like, I had that whole thing that I talked about ad nauseum. But have you always embraced your fur?
Yeah, I've never been like annoyed by it ever. I like sneezed at 19 and my twin death happened like that. Like it was just like, and I just got everything.
That's next
like
thing you know,
hairy chest, like. Beard. I didn't grow my beard out really till COVID, but I've just been like, I love that I'm hairy. Yeah.
And we do too. We celebrate fur on this podcast as much as we can as a rebellion against the Abercrombie bags that only showed smooth torsos. What's your political opinion about Bush?
Which one? One or two? No, I'm just kidding. I love it. I love Bush. Yeah. When it's completely hairless, I kind of like think it's, I mean, you know, I'll still like, you know, I'll go for it if I'm into it. But like, I would prefer it to not be like naked mole rat. You know what I mean? I want some hair there at least. Yeah, for sure.
I agree. I thank you for being on the right side of herstory.
Always.
Well, there's something that we've glossed over a bit, which is your love of Charlie's Angels. And I think that as pop culture queens here, it's important for us to acknowledge our mothers, Lucy Liu, Cameron Diaz, and Drew Barrymore.
Yes.
When you say Full Throttle, Charlie's Angels Full Throttle, so sorry for the question. Is that number two?
The second one.
Okay.
Yeah. So, it's one of those rare occasions where, in my opinion, the second film is better than the first one, but they are both iconic.
This is like a Sister Act question because I find that Sister Act 2, Back in the Habit, has improved upon the
original. So good.
But in this scenario, I have always been pulled towards Charlie's Angels number one, simply because of 12 different scenes that made me gay. Can I name drop for a second, Maxwell?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
So I've become friends with a gorgeous, lovely couple, the August couple, and John August is a screenwriter and he wrote the Charlie's Angels films. And so I was at a dinner at his place recently and I said to him, He's a gay.
Great.
Gay man wrote Charlie's Angels. And so I said to him, I was like, John, can I tell you that I am obsessed with one of the most niche quotes from Charlie's Angels? And it's the part where Cameron Diaz is doing the bird call. Oh. And she's like trying to figure out where they are. And she hears the bird call where Bill Murray's in prison. She goes, you know what that is, right? And it just says whatever the name of the bird is. And she goes, Carmel.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, Cameron Diaz doing the bird call going, Carmel, was always so funny to me.
Somehow from her lips, somehow. It was perfect.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Yeah. And then John gave me, of course, the whole, like, he did the research to find out, like, what sort of bird would be in Carmel, blah, blah, blah. It was just, like, a beautiful masterclass in finding out the gay genius that goes behind the movies like Charlie's Angels.
I mean, the reason they are so good is because if you do camp and you do it right, like, The fact is the first one was so good and it was so camp because like it's a campy story. So if you successfully make it good cinema, keep it camp, keep it serious but unserious like they did, like it's a perfect film. And then the second one, they just like tied it in even better to me. They were like, okay, we're going to push it a little bit more, you know, like, you know, Cameron Diaz is going to be spinning on a chair in the opening scene and like fighting like 80 men falling out of the helicopter into a dam. Like, cinema.
Well, to your point, though, you are, as you said earlier, an action gay in a way. Like, you loved your women to be kicking ass. And I think that makes sense. Like, I mean, so many of the, like, remember in the first Charlie's Angels where they, like, are climbing over the fence during a chase scene? And it's like when they do the full, like, and then Scary Movie does beautifully parody it.
Yeah.
But there's another pop culture reference that I feel like it's important for us to touch in on. In fact, on December 24th, you tweeted, I met these gays at a party last night who told me they didn't like heated rivalry, so I stopped talking to them. Maxwell. Oh,
Dad, this is why I don't tweet. I barely tweet.
Because you're going to go on a gay podcast and have someone be like, you said this on December 24th. Well, really, the question is, are there any other pieces of pop culture that would lead you to leaving a conversation if it got hate?
You know, I am just like, I'm all for a contrarian. I'm all for someone who wants to think differently. But I can read through your bullshit when you're just trying to be different instead of actually having the opinion of being a contrarian.
Say that.
And so I just like, you know, specifically for pop culture that people don't let, I don't know. I don't know if I could find that so quickly, but.
No, that's, well, I think you're getting us into something very important, which is that if you are a contrarian just to be different, it really can be so fucking annoying. And I think that something like heated rivalry did bring that up in some people, which was that if it's going to be a big deal, I'm going to wear a badge of pride to say that I don't like it, even if I secretly do, because I don't want to be a part of the quote unquote mainstream.
Yeah.
even though it's like a miracle piece of culture that the fact that it was able to be such a horny gay show and then get so much attention.
Yeah,
that of course I understand.
Of course we can have improvements. Like, yes, like they're both hot, like blah, blah, blah. Like, of course we can create all these arguments. Like the argument in the tweet that made me start that was like, they were like, they're both like white. And I was like, one isn't white. He's actually Asian. And he goes, he might as well be white. And I was just like,
problematic.
That's kind of like what I tweaked. And I was like, I'm leaving this conversation. Like, I was just like,
Was the person who said that a white gay?
No, they weren't, which is what made me even like be a little more confused.
Okay, now I'm gonna take my daggers out then and say,
yeah,
whatever they say. I mean, listen, I understand, yes, any type of criticism over any type of like pop culture, you are so entitled. I do think though, like for something like Heated Rivalry, you have to really have a good argument. And to say that they're both white, I don't think is a good argument.
Just because he wasn't. Like something. I get that he's half Asian descent, like things like that. So that was maybe their argument. But to me, I was like, they're still not white. Don't take that away from the Asian community. Like,
or just like, his experience. Like, that gets into like shaky, shaky ground. But I think that like that to me
gays
is,
just don't like gays to win. Have you noticed like so many times just don't?
Let's have that conversation because that is a generalization that is said. Mm-hmm. And I do think it is true for some people. I do think though it's very clear to me when you meet someone who's just like, yeah, no, they will champion other gays. They are going to take something at like face value. And then you'll meet someone who just like hates themselves so much that they can't be happy for other people. And I'm not going to name them obviously, but most of like the gays, like comedians, podcasters, whatever that I've met really are great. Like I could even name drop some of the great, like my friend Zach Noe Towers. I talked about him last
love
week.
Zach. Love Zach. Love,
like he is such a fucking gem. So many, like think about like all the creators that have these big platforms, like, do you know Dylan Carlino? He was the host of Some of This Is Bad, a great podcast. Now he has Feeling Girly. I've been asking him for advice on stuff. He has blown up and he is still so kind. Vincent came on the podcast and I was intimidated because I love Vincent's music. And now every time I see Vincent out and about, could not be nicer, feels like a good friend. Like
one of my closest friends.
Love. And these are people that really champion. Then I could name, which I won't, like three gays who actively are either like dismissive or like make sure that I know that I don't have their respect. And of course I start to be like, am I bad? Do they hate me? What did I do wrong?
Yeah, of course.
But I realize it's just like, I do think those gays are the minority, I guess is the point that I'm
Yeah, you're making. Right. You're right. But there's always that argument. I'm always just like, can't we just be happy? Like we have a show where hot, even if they're not hot, we have gay guys fucking on screen and all of America or the world is watching this. And like,
and it's like a beautiful, intimate relationship story. Like, sure,
and it was only sexual at first. Like, of course, it stayed sexy at times, but like, I think it was beautiful marketing. Like, sex sells, lure everyone in, and then show them that they can act. The stories are real.
Yes.
Like, I wish that like Connor Story could have won an Emmy for that monologue in Russian and English. Like that was insane. I have goosebumps.
I just got chills.
Yeah. Ah, I was like, this bitch needs an Emmy for this.
Oh, he will. They're both going to have incredible careers. And how cool to think that a horny gay hockey show catapulted their careers. And I just think that we need to like, yes, acknowledge the gays who can't be happy for other gays, but also like celebrate the ones that are uplifting others. And you to me seem to be a gay guy that is not like a cunt to other gays who are making shit happen. Would you say that's a correct assessment?
I'll always support my community and I'll always like be there for them. Do I have a sassy side? Yes, but only to my friends.
Of course. And by the way, gay sass is a time honored tradition. I am married to one of the biggest bitches I know and I love him so much for it. And but he's still a very, you know, good person. That being said though, you really do celebrate so much of queer life. In fact, you founded Project Contrast, which is a nonprofit highlighting the experiences of queer youth in rural areas. You published a book called Young Queer America. So it really does feel like you are giving attention to queer people who are growing up in places that are not really celebrating them. Would you say that you had any experiences as a young gay person that sort of inspired you to make their voices heard?
Yeah, definitely. I think like my main thing in my work and what I want to do is make people feel seen, period. Like that's what I want to do. That's what my photography portrays. I try to like, I don't have like themed photo shoots and editorials and this and that. And yes, I've had those opportunities and I've had those moments and I'm very grateful for them. But like at the end of the day, like I don't want to like dress Cheyenne Jackson up in a 1960s outfit and make an editorial for a magazine for that. Like I want to photograph you as you. I want to like make you like feel seen and important, because as a kid growing up, I never felt seen a lot of the times, you know, being growing up Mormon, my dad was gone a lot of my years. My mom was gone a lot of my years. So like, it was basically my twin and I that raised ourselves a lot of the time. And, you know, I just never felt seen. I never felt seen in my community. And I never felt seen as in the only openly gay boy in my town when I came out. So
when did you come out?
This is like me healing my inner child, I guess, as well. I came out, started to come out in high school. I was like, I graduated in 2011. So I was kind of like the last generation of where kids not being out in high school, I feel like. Of course, it still happens. But yeah, I came out in 2011. Like I came out in like 2010-ish. And just like started living my gay life. Like senior year, I was already hanging out with gays in Salt Lake City. I was already hanging out with college kids. I was already sneaking into gay bars.
Yeah, you were.
I started early.
Which is very brave. And I'm not just saying that like to be schmaltzy. I think that people often think about Utah as being sort of like a barren wasteland of it's just straight white people. But I've actually been reading a bit about it. And there is a huge queer community, especially in Salt Lake City, all over the state. And I think that it does a disservice to sort of negate the fact that there is a big queer community there.
I mean, you have to like quickly, like just have to like take that narrative out. Cause like I travel the country to document queer people in queer communities. I've been to every single state almost. And I've seen every queer community that exists pretty much. And like there's a huge gay community, queer community everywhere you go. You know, of course it'll be smaller at times or there's politically different just because of where you are, but like we're everywhere. And we have to remember that. And you'll be surprised where you go certain places.
Oh, 100. I mean, listen, I'm from St. Louis, Missouri, and I felt like when I was growing up that I was the only gay person besides the guy who cut my family's hair. And I felt that I would never meet another gay person until I left. And now when I go back to visit my family, every single time I make sure to go to the gay bars, I make sure to, like you said, heal your inner child by taking these photographs. The way that I do it is by going out and realizing that like the whole time there were people like me there and, you know, people listening to this all over the country, all over the world, like it can feel so isolating, but it's very important to find your people and find your community. And I will say that, there are going to be questions from me over on Substack about your first gay experiences from a horny point of view, because I think that is just as important as the spiritual embracing of our queerness. So I will be asking about first boy kisses, what the Salt Lake City D is like. So let's make sure you
naughty.
Are.
It's naughty. Those are repressed boys over there, okay? Boys over there, okay?
See, I'm already wanting to ask you follow-ups. I'm like, do oppressed boys spit in your face more? We'll talk about it. Okay. Before we get into that, though, we've gone through your Cheesecake Factory political stance. We've gone through Bush. We've gone through your photographing. Are there any people that you have not yet photographed that is on your bucket list, or maybe just creative experiences that you are gaping wide ready for?
Oh, my God. I mean, so many people I want to photograph. For sure. I don't necessarily have a list, but you know, I definitely would be like, oh, I want to photograph one day. And you really never know who you're going to photograph. Cause like there are days where I am like, I'll get an email or call sheet and it'll be like someone I just like never assumed I would photograph, but I grew up watching them or something like that. So
Are you giving freelancer vibes? Are you working for like a big agency? Like, what is that look
no,
like?
No, I've always been freelance. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've never tried to have an agent. I probably should at some point. But yeah, no, I just is like, it, is I've it, been is doing that, it all myself.
Does that feel mostly empowering, or are you ever freaking out about like, is the next job going to come?
I mean, yeah, both. Like, I'm very happy in the life that I have and like the jobs that I have. And I'm really grateful to, you know, live in Los Angeles and like be like a full-time photographer here, but, and have always kind of been a full-time photographer here too. So I'm pretty grateful there, but yeah, I mean, the fatigue is real sometimes. Like sometimes I want to go be a creative director somewhere. I want to go be an art director somewhere. I want to I direct more now, which is nice, video work. But yeah, I think project wise, I really want to get further into more documentary photography and documentaries in general. And really actually, because I started Project Contrast in 2017, and the stories I have and the people I meet that just aren't these kids, there's just so much more you can document that has nothing to do with, you know, like pictures say things in there, the things that I've documented are great, but like, gosh, like, it'd just be beautiful to be able to highlight them even more.
I kind of feel like we're in a golden age of documentary right now. I feel like obviously true crime is its own thing, but I feel like outside of that, there are so many incredible documentaries that it's one of my favorite things to watch, if I'm being honest. Like, I don't know if it's like, I'm not proud of this, but I used to watch Intervention Weeping. And okay. I think I watched it because it was like just like cathartic, but also maybe, again, not proud of this, but maybe because I was watching people's lives who were worse than mine. And that like sort of like gave me the documentary bug of like just loving to see like the real gritty fucking story. But listen, we do want to get over to Substack for these horny questions. So let me ask you before that, the final gay ass podcast question, Maxwell Poth, which is, if the world was ending, you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
So this would just be like an actress that I love, right? That you said that wore a wig or something. I didn't get that.
I say my definition of character actress is a woman over 40 who has worn one wig one time.
Well, definitely,
but
yeah.
People love to argue outside of those parameters. So it's basically, yes, a female actress that you would die for or you think deserves to live and just someone that you absolutely adore.
Goldie Hawn. Mm-hmm, absolutely. She's
not been brought up in a minute.
She gave birth to Kate Hudson, that beautiful Hollywood smile, you know, a few other actors that are, you know, great, love them, but they're dudes. I love Goldie Hawn. I've always loved her. I grew up watching Overboard and all of her films, and like, I just want to be with her. I just want her to like be my mom sometimes.
Listen, Goldie Hawn is such a gorgeous answer, and I think that she really is the ideal character actress because she is stunning on camera. You can imagine having a white wine with her and just giggling your fucking face off.
Absolutely. That's like top tier dream of mine, to just even just like sit around a fire outside with her and just chat.
Well, Maxwell, we're manifesting your Goldie Hawn chat. Maybe Kate Hudson will be there as well. And we are going to put our gay hands together and pray. And I'm also going to thank you for coming on this gay ass podcast and being such a darn peach. Will you tell these listeners where to follow you? If there's anything that you would like for them to know.
Yes, you can follow me just at my Instagram, Maxwell Poth. I don't tweet of it a lot, so you don't really need to go on that. My nonprofit's Project Contrast. And just keep looking out for my projects and the things I'm doing and the things I'm gonna accomplish.
Hell fucking yeah. Maxwell, we're gonna head over to Substack so I can ask you about your first boy kisses, about some of your horny thirst traps and more. So we'll see you all over there. But for now, Maxwell, stay gorgeous, stay gay, and you're a star.
See you on the other side.
That's a gay ass name for a gay ass podcast.
A BetterHelp ad. Therapy isn't just for times of major challenge. It's a valuable tool for anyone wanting to improve their well-being. It can help you develop healthy coping skills, set boundaries, and support personal growth. BetterHelp makes it easy to get matched online with a fully licensed therapist right from your phone. No commuting, no waiting rooms. And you can switch therapists at any time. Sign up at BetterHelp.com and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com.